Welcome to Christ Church Manchester Sermon Podcast. CCM is one church that meets every Sunday in various locations across Manchester. For more information about who we are or about our Sunday meetings, please visit www.christchurchmanchester.com. My home is not on this
earth, not in this world. Thank you, Matt. Please do sit down. Let me reiterate my welcome from earlier. It's great to have you with us for our carol service today. I wonder, is anyone feeling Christmassy yet? Yes. I mean, you're in the middle of a carol service. Surely the answer has to be yes. There's a certain time in the year, I think, for everybody where Christmas starts to kick in. I mean, some people, my household growing up was like this a bit, actually. Traditional 12 days of Christmas. So you have to count like 12 days before, and that's when you're allowed to put your tree up. That's when you're allowed to decorate the house. And you get 12 days after as well, but it's quite regimented. You've got people like that, or you've got other people who, as soon as you get your advent calendar, that's it. Christmas kicks in now. 1st December onwards, it's legit. Or you get some grumpy people, like, I'll give you Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, maybe Boxing Day, that's all you're getting out of me. For some people, there's a visual sign that makes you feel Christmassy. So the shops is one. Like when Tesco starts putting up their Christmas displays, and it's always straight after Halloween, isn't it? For me, that doesn't make me feel Christmassy. It just makes me think, what are you doing? This is too early in the year for all of this. Or for some of you, it's when the markets start appearing in town. So instead of like getting off your tram or your train or your bus and having a nice leisurely walk down an uncrowded street, now there's just too many people in too small a space, and that's like the Christmas spirit, isn't it? Maybe it's if you've got kids, when you get the script for the school play sent home and your child is learning the lines for sheet number 75, like both lines are a bar and that's it. For me, really, what kicks me into like Christmas gear is when I start hearing Christmas songs playing in the background. It was probably mid-November that I heard my first one this year. I was in Costa, I was just queuing up for my drink, and I hear Wham come on, and like, Last Christmas, and boom, suddenly I'm in the Christmas mood already. There are certain songs that just do that, and there aren't many. Like, every year you get new bands try to do a classic Christmas song, and most of them fail. But Wham, Last Christmas definitely is one that does it. What else is like that? The Pogues are like that. If you hear the Pogues, Fairy Tale of New York, you know Christmas is here. Slade, Wizard, there's a few. The last one to break in was probably about 15 years ago when it was The Darkness. Christmas Time, Don't Let the Bells End. But since then, there hasn't been a new, genuinely good Christmas song made. But despite me listing some Christmas songs there, I haven't told you the best one yet. And I'm sure deep down you all know what the best one is. I read in The Guardian, they did a list of the best 50. And they got it right. Come on, someone tell me the best Christmas song of all time. Yeah, Mariah. Yeah, everyone knows that. Everyone knows that the truest, the best, the most Christmassy of all Christmas songs is Mariah Carey. All I Want for Christmas is You. Let me tell you why. Firstly, the mood of it is just perfect. It's upbeat, it's fun. Whatever your worries are, they just kind of pass away when Mariah comes on. But also, Mariah is telling us something fundamental in that song about Christmas, because we all know it's true that Christmas is about more than the trappings. And she says, I don't want a lot for Christmas. There's just one thing that I need. I don't care about the presents underneath the Christmas tree. And I don't think any of us do, really, do we? I mean, yeah, giving and exchanging gifts is all well and good. It's part of it. But we know that Christmas is about more than that. So the depth of the lyrics is up there with the beat of the music. I'm being a little bit silly. But there is something true in that song, that Christmas, fundamentally, it's about people. That's what she's singing, and that's what I want to talk to us about this evening. I think there's a sense in which God could look at each of you from heaven and say, all I want for Christmas is you. And so that's what the message is called tonight. All I want for Christmas is you. Because that's the very reason for all the Christmas readings that we heard. That's the reason why he sent his son into the world. Sent Jesus to be born of Mary, to be brought up with Mary and Joseph, to grow up, to do what he did in the world. It was all because he wanted people. He wanted to bring people home, back into friendship with him. I'm going to give us two examples of this, and then I'm just going to talk briefly about what it might mean for us. And the first example, we heard it in the reading that Abigail did about the shepherds. And let's just understand a little bit about their lives. So the first thing you need to know about shepherds 2,000 years ago is they were poor. Shepherds were not wealthy people. They were kind of earning just about enough to survive. So they could put food on the table as long as it was lamb, presumably. They could put clothes on their kids' back as long as they were made of wool. But they had enough to survive, but that was probably about it. It wasn't a lucrative employment. The other thing to know about them is they were social outsiders. So they stayed a long way from civilization, because in those days, the main worries about sheep, partly was that they'd wander off, but also partly was that they'd be attacked. There were wolves, there were bears, there were different animals out there that if you left the sheep unattended, would attack them, would threaten the sheep. So you needed the shepherds to stay with them, not just on a 9-to-5 basis, but all the time. So the shepherds would tend to sleep out in the fields. They'd do like a camping trip every day in the field with the sheep, making sure the sheep were all right. And you can imagine if you're someone, you're not living in the city, you're not living in the town, not even in a village, you're living on the hill in a field of sheep, you're going to start to become a little bit odd. You're not going to have much human interaction. When you do go down into the village, it's probably a bit awkward. You don't know how to deal with other people very well. I mean, even your personal hygiene, you're living in a field full of sheep, it's not going to be very good. And so shepherds started to develop a bit of a reputation as kind of outsiders, as social pariahs, as people not to associate with. In fact, the rabbis of the day, there were 5 different rabbis who made lists of what they called prescribed trades. And these were basically jobs that they would discourage. Said, look, if you want to be a respectable person, don't get one of these jobs. And shepherd made 3 of the 5 lists. Okay, it wasn't a well thought of job at all. And people would actually start to shun them. People wouldn't want to talk to shepherds. So you can imagine these shepherds on the hillside, they get this message to go down to the stable. Part of what would be in their head is, but if I go down there, will I be welcome? Will I be wanted? Will they even let me in? Won't this be embarrassing for the people there? And so it wasn't an easy thing for them. I remember years ago, I was invited to interview at a prestigious university. And I was terrified, but part of my worry is because I was just a lad from a northern town, none of my family had ever been to university. I was worried, will someone like me fit? Will I be welcome? Will people actually want to associate with someone from my background? That's something of what the shepherds would have had as they went down into Bethlehem. But what we saw in the reading that we had is not only were they allowed in, but they were actually invited. All the action was going on in the stable. All the things that God was doing in the world were there. There was Mary, Joseph, baby Jesus, the animals. That was where the action was. Now, the shepherds wouldn't have been thinking about it. They'd have had no awareness of what God was doing. And yet, there were. And maybe some of you can identify with this. Maybe you've never given a second thought to what God might be up to in the world. You're just cracking on with your life. You're doing your job. You're seeing your friends. You're hanging out with your family. All the same things that most people do. And if that's you, you probably have a lot in common with the shepherds. God might be doing something somewhere, but it's not within your field of experience. And yet it's like God looked at the scene and looked at the stable and looked at Mary and looked at Joseph and looked at the baby and the animals and thought, there's something missing. There's something else needed to complete my nativity scene. It's like he said, I want those guys that no one else wants to talk to, those outsiders, those shepherds up on the hill, I want them to be here as well. And look at the lengths that God went to get them there. He sent his angels. You know, if you're God and you've got these angels at your disposal, you know how many times in human history have people seen angels? You know, it's quite a rare thing, isn't it? But for God to send his angels to bring the shepherds in. I mean, just imagine for a second. I don't know what jobs you all do, but imagine you're at work and an angel turns up and starts talking to you. That's going to kind of freak you out, isn't it? You're going to be distracted from your job for the rest of the day. Now imagine not just one, but thousands of angels, and they're all singing. That's enough to get your attention. You're probably going to book half a day's annual leave and go and do whatever the angels tell you. And the message of the angels, fear not, for behold, I bring you good news of great joy that will be for all the people. And that word all is key, because to a shepherd hearing that, it's like, oh, it's not just for the religious people. It's not just for the respectable people. This good news is even for people like me. The ultimate outsiders, the afterthoughts, the people to whom nobody would give a second thought. Here was God giving a second thought for them. The lengths he went to bring them in. It's like 2,000 years ago, God would see these working men, these social outcasts on the hillside with their sheep and say to them, shepherds, all I want for Christmas is you. And he did what it took to make it happen. Here's my second example, you can probably guess it, from the reading that Matt gave us, the Magi. Let me break down a few misconceptions about these guys, because often the way we tell this story is horribly inaccurate, because we talk about the three kings, okay? There's two things wrong with that description of them. Number one, they weren't kings, and number two, there weren't three of them. So, who were they? They were actually Magi. So, in the school productions, we put crowns on them, we say they're kings. They weren't. They were astrologers. They were stargazers. That was their profession. And there weren't necessarily three of them. The story just tells that they brought three gifts, and there was a group of Magi. We have no idea how many there were. We know they brought gold, frankincense, and myrrh. So often the depictions of it, the way we tell the story, is that it was one gift per Magi. Not necessarily true. Now, some of us maybe who have a slightly more sophisticated view than that, we tend to assume they come from Persia. We think of like your typical Persian stargazers, but that's probably not right either. In the day that this was written, saying they were from the east would have meant one thing to the people reading it, and that is the east side of the River Jordan. So it's people just to the east of the River Jordan, which would be southern Arabia, is probably where they were from. Now, we know that southern Arabia is an area where gold can be mined there. Also, there are the trees that grow there from which you can harvest frankincense and from which you can harvest myrrh. So that, again, it would make a lot of sense. In the 1920s, there was a British scholar called E.F.F. Bishop. He went to that area to study the people groups that lived there. And he discovered a nomadic Bedouin tribe in Jordan. This tribe was predominantly Muslim, and they called themselves the Al-Kokabani. And Al-Kokabani literally means those who study or follow the planets. And he started asking them, why do you call yourself that? That's a kind of odd name for your tribe. And he said, well, our ancestors followed the stars, and they went to see baby Jesus. And I think it's quite likely that these Magi are probably the ancestors of this Muslim tribe from Arabia. So these were people who were a long way away. They wouldn't have heard the promises of the Old Testament that God would do something. They wouldn't have had any interaction with God's people. They wouldn't have known the story. If the shepherds were like the outsiders within the community, these guys, they were like true outsiders. They were just distant. They didn't know. They were in a different place. They were just getting on with wandering the Arabian deserts with their tribe, taking an interest in stargazing. That's how they tried to piece the world together. And again, it's like God is looking at this scene. Now we've got Mary, Joseph, baby, animals. We've got some shepherds there. They've probably brought a few lambs with them as well. But he's saying there's still something missing. There's still someone else I want here. And it's these tribesmen, these Magi. And what does he do to get them there? Well, if their whole world was about gazing the stars, he gave them a message that they could understand. It's a little bit like, imagine you're really into astrology today. And you read your horoscopes every day. You've got like an app that tells you your horoscope. Imagine you like open it up and it's like, right, today's horoscope, Capricorn, what does it say? It says you better get down to Bethlehem. Something's going on there in a stable. Go and see, there's a new king born. That's kind of what happened. He gave a message in the stars that to these guys would be interpreted as there's a new king born in Bethlehem. It's like God would rearrange the whole stars in the sky to get them there. If for the shepherds he sent his angels, now he's moving the sky around. That's the lengths that God would go to. Even for people far away, miles outside, never had any interest in God or his promises or his people, he wants them there. And he does everything he can. It's like God would look at these Bedouin tribesmen, these Magi with an interest in astrology, and say to them, all I want for Christmas is you. And then he did what it took to make it happen. So I wonder, right, if God would look at that scene when the shepherds weren't there and say there's something missing, and he drew them there. And then he'd look at it and say there's still something missing for the Magi, and he drew them there. I wonder who else he would want to bring to that scene. And I'm telling you that it's you and it's me, it's all of us. God wants people, and he wants to draw them all to himself. When I was a kid, I went on holiday to Spain one year, and I had a toy that I was bought for my travel bag, a mini Orville the Duck. Anyone remember Orville the Duck? He was quality. He was a little green duck that was like on kids' TV. And I had a toy one, and I played with it for like the first two or three days of that holiday. And I took it to the beach one day, and I lost it on the beach. And I was heartbroken, because I wanted my Orville the Duck back. And so every day from then on for the rest of the holiday, when we got up, We had breakfast, and Mum and Dad were saying, like, right, what do we all want to do today? Every single day, I cast my vote for, let's go to the beach. Let's go back to that beach. And so some of the days we did. Some of the days I got to choose. And when we got there, I was like, let's go and sit there in the same spot that we were sitting on that day that I lost it. And I'd spend all my time there digging in the sand, trying to find my Orville the Duck, because it was lost, and because I wanted it back. And so I went to great lengths to get back this thing that I wanted so much. That story I've told you is true, by the way. It is similar to a story that Jesus once told. Jesus told of a man who, he was walking along, he saw a field. And in this field, there was a treasure. He really, really wanted this treasure. But it wasn't his field, and he couldn't just go into someone else's field and take the treasure. That would be stealing. So he said, I'm going to buy the field. I'm going to acquire this field, then I'll get the treasure as well. And so he was willing to sell everything that he had. He sold his house, he sold all his livestock, everything he had of value, he sold it. So he had enough money to buy this field because he wanted the treasure so much. And Jesus said, that's how it is with God. It's like God has seen something and he wants it so, so much. What has he seen? It's people. It's people like the shepherds. It's people like the wise men. It's people like you. It's people like me. And he was willing to give up everything to get what he wanted. He even gave his son to come and live in this world. That's what Christmas is all about. God giving his son to come and to grow up and to die for our sins. That's what the Bible teaches, so that we can be brought home to be friends with God again. You know, I don't believe anyone in this room is here by coincidence. I believe you're here because God is doing his work to draw you back to himself, because God loves you. I want you to know that. And God invites you to be friends with him. As a church, we meet here every Sunday. Over Christmas, we're taking the next 2 weeks as a little break, but from January, every Sunday we'll be here. If this is new for you, if you've got questions, if you've never thought about these things before, that's all right. We're happy to walk with you. We'd invite you to join us and go on a journey and see where it takes you. Also on your chairs, you'll see a flyer for our Alpha course. This starts in late January. And our Alpha course is a place where once a week it's a gathering where there'll be a short explanation of some of the things that the Bible teaches. And then a table discussion where you can ask any questions that you have and just kind of informally discuss things. I would strongly recommend, if you've got questions, why not come along to the Alpha course as well. Christmas isn't about presents or trees. It's not about endless repeats of bad TV shows. It's not even about snow. Christmas is about people. And Christmas is about what God did to come into our world and invite us back to be in good relationship with himself. So maybe over the next few days, when you're doing your last minute shopping, or when you're just kind of taking a break in a coffee shop, or maybe when you're at your work's Christmas party and you hear Mariah in the background, let that be a prompt for you. Let it be something that brings to mind God in heaven saying to you, all I want for Christmas is you. And then giving the best gift he could possibly give, his son Jesus Christ, to personally invite you to come home to God. This is a choice that I made when I was 19 years of age, second year of uni. I heard someone do a talk somewhat similar to this, a little bit different. I've not just ripped them off completely. But I heard someone do this kind of a talk about how God wanted to make a way for me to be friends with him. And I made the decision. I said, I'm going to go for it. And I gave my life to be a Christian and to be friends with God. I would tell you it's the best decision I've made in my entire life. I'd commend you to do the same.